Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 2449, with a release date of Friday, October 4th, 2024, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Heroism among the devastation of Hurricane Helene. New life at the former site of the Arecibo Radio Telescope, and the Wilderness Protocol helps with the dramatic rescue of a hiker in Idaho. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2449 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Union, Kentucky, here's Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Our top story is Hurricane Helene, which swept through the United States southern states, bringing what is being called unprecedented tragedy. Amateur radio can be at its best when times are at their worst, and Randy Sly, W4XJ, shares an example of that in one area of hardest hit North Carolina.
Since making landfall on the evening of September 26th, Hurricane Helene not only left a trail of devastation, but also produced thousands of acts of heroism, especially in the remote areas of the United States impacted by floodwaters. In addition to emergency personnel and first responders, those involved included helicopter pilots, teams with pack mules, and other volunteers, including hams providing emergency communications. Examples of life-saving communication could be heard around the clock on the W4HTP repeater at Mount Mitchell, North Carolina. On Saturday morning, September 28th, Dan Gitro, K2DMG, was in his ham shack and knew that the area was experiencing heavy rains. He got on the W4HTP repeater, which was surprisingly not busy, put out his call to see if anyone needed assistance, and immediately received a number of responses from hams in the flooded areas. Since that time, he and the other net controls handled hundreds of health and welfare calls, maintaining continuous communications with the areas of western North Carolina most seriously affected. Not only was the net professionally run as it passed health and welfare traffic, but it maintained a personal touch, bringing news, hope, and encouragement to those in the affected areas. Through the efforts of the repeater's owner, Harold Perry, W4HTP, listeners from across the country were able to hear the repeater's traffic as it was rebroadcast through the web service Broadcastify. Thomas Witherspoon, K4SWL, who was active on the repeater, also provided in-person coverage from western North Carolina on his website, qrpeer.com. Hurricane Helene produced a path of destruction for nearly 800 miles from Florida's Big Bend to Asheville, North Carolina, and farther north, leaving over 180 dead and hundreds more missing. The aftermath of this Category 4 hurricane brought floodwaters of historic proportions and spawned more than 50 tornadoes in Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, the Carolinas, and nearby states. This is Randy Sly, W4XJ.
Just as Hurricane Francine had done 2 weeks earlier in Louisiana, Hurricane Helene knocked numerous broadcast stations off the air, this time in a number of U.S. southern states. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, has that report.
Hurricane Helene, which had a death toll exceeding 180 and caused landslides, flooding, and power outages, also knocked nearly 50 broadcast radio and television stations off the air by Sunday, September 29th, in a number of southern states. Radio stations took the more severe hit, cutting off one source of critical emergency broadcasts. Based on outage data received after the storm made landfall in Florida on September 26th, the FCC's Disaster Information Reporting System looked at broadcast stations in Tennessee, Virginia, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, where the storm passed through. 48 broadcast stations, both AM and FM, were knocked off the air, while 6 TV stations reported having gone dark. Georgia took a particularly severe hit, with 3 TV stations, 19 FM radio stations, and 3 AM radio stations out of service. North and South Carolina also suffered major broadcast station outages. According to The Desk, an industry website, most stations went off the air because they had lost power. Others reported transmitter damage as the cause. The multi-state scene was a larger replay of what happened 2 weeks earlier in Louisiana, when at least five radio stations were knocked off the air after Hurricane Francine, a Category 2 storm, struck the region. This is Kent Peterson, KC0, DGY.
Ham's ability to follow the wilderness protocol proved life-saving for one injured man in the hilly backcountry of Idaho. George Zafiropoulos, KJ6VU, has that story.
In January of 2023, Clearwater County Emergency Management's Don Gardner, W7PJ, gave a presentation to other members of the Clearwater Valley Amateur Radio Club about wilderness protocol, a method of monitoring frequencies outside repeater range in case emergencies occur in remote areas unserved by regular means of communications. That protocol was kicked swiftly into action for a group of hams on September 21st after one of them found a severely injured man who had apparently suffered an accident on a gravel road with his four-wheeled off-road vehicle. According to a report in the Clearwater Tribune, Mac W7ENZ found the man and, while he tried to assist him, handed the ham radio he was carrying to Ed K7ELC. Ed called for assistance using 146.52 MHz, the VHF simplex radio frequency designated for wilderness protocol. Greg, WX7Z, heard the call and phoned 911. Don told Newsline that Greg knows the area well and was able to give specific directions for EMS and other responders to follow to reach the man. Greg also recommended a landing site for transportation by life flight. Don told Newsline that the injured man, who had difficulty breathing, was in serious condition and transported by life flight to a hospital. He was determined to have suffered head injuries, a broken collarbone, and broken ribs. Don told the Clearwater Tribune, quote, "The more that ham radio operators listen to the radio, the more the chance there is that someone will be listening to take your emergency call." This is George Zafiropoulos, KJ6VU.
The International Amateur Radio Union, which coordinates the radio frequencies used by ham radio satellites, announced that it recently processed request number 1,000 for a satellite frequency. The IARU's Satellite Frequency Coordination Panel has faced new challenges in recent years with the increasing popularity and growth of CubeSats. With less onerous costs to launch these small satellites, the focus has been on carefully managing the spectrum and ensuring minimal interference with terrestrial services. The IARU issued a statement saying, quote, "As Earth's orbit becomes more crowded, the IARU's work in frequency coordination will remain critical for future missions," end quote. The Sri Lankan amateur community has suffered the loss of two prominent, well-regarded amateurs who became silent keys one day apart. We have that report from Jason Daniels, VK2 LAW.
It did not take long for Vasanth Garuj, 4 Sierra 7 Victor Golf, to make a name for himself among prominent DXs not long after receiving his license in the mid-1970s. He was also devoted to making amateur radio better for all involved Sri Lankans. His devotion to that mission landed him twice in the role of President of the Radio Society of Sri Lanka, first from 2005 to 2007, and again in 2015 to 2016. The Radio Society referred to him as a, quote, "cornerstone of the Sri Lankan amateur radio community," end quote. His many efforts included the establishment of key repeater stations at sites in Sri Lanka that improved communication and connectivity. The Radio Society's statement said, quote, "He was always willing to lend his time, knowledge and resources, whether it was tuning duplexes or offering technical advice. Vasanth was not just a leader, but a dear friend, mentor, and guiding force for many," end quote. Vasanth, who died on the 15th of September, was 70. Sri Lankan amateurs learned that one day earlier, on the 14th of September, Sadipa Sipala, 4 Sierra 6 Sierra Alpha Delta, became a silent key. Sadipa was a dependable mentor to operators using the digital modes or the automatic packet reporting system. He was, above all, a kind and respected mentor, according to the Radio Society website, which praised him for sharing his wide knowledge of astronomy, antenna theory, and radio science with hams and university undergraduates. He took a particular interest in encouraging young students to embrace radio science. The Society said on the website his passing has left us all in shock. This is Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including D-Star Reflector 91C on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. local time in Melbourne, Australia. A well-known entrepreneur who had a lifelong fascination with all things wireless has become a silent key. We hear about him from Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Dwayne Hendricks, WA8DZP, believed in the versatility of radios and the people who love to use them. A licensed ham since the age of 12, he enjoyed tinkering with wireless in its many forms starting in his teens. Much later in life, in business, he acquired the nickname the Broadband Cowboy from Wired Magazine in a nod to his work in helping bring wireless broadband networks to many developing nations around the world where they were needed. Dwayne became a silent key on the 20th of September. His longtime friend, Steve Stroh, N8GNJ, publisher of the Zero Retries weekly newsletter, said that his death came 1 month after he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. His activity in the wireless world was all-encompassing. He played a major role in the Grants Advisory Committee of Amateur Radio Digital Communications for 3 years, helping to ensure that a number of international projects received funding. According to the ARDC, he took particular pride in the Slippers to Sat project in Nepal, which connected marginalized students with opportunities in space technology. Dwayne later followed up on the progress of many funded projects as an inaugural member of the grants evaluation team. His deep involvement in the wireless community also included posts he held with a number of nonprofit national amateur radio organizations. He had been a member of the FCC's Technological Advisory Council and a director of the Wireless Communications Alliance, an industry group representing companies making equipment for the license-free frequencies. This is Jack Parker, W8ISH.
In Puerto Rico, the site where the iconic Arecibo radio telescope once stood is being readied for a new role in the world of science. Andy Morrison, K9AWM, explains what's coming next.
Arecibo C3, the U.S. National Science Foundation's Educational Science Center, is preparing a full opening soon at the site where the legendary Arecibo Observatory reigned until damages suffered in 2020 compelled the radio telescope's dismantling. The new facility in Puerto Rico is formerly known as the NSF Arecibo Center for Culturally Relevant and Inclusive Science Education, Computational Skills, and Community Engagement. According to its website, the center is building on the legacy of the radio telescope, serving as an epicenter of STEM education research and skill building. Conferences, meetings, and workshops will be held there, along with public science programs. An assistant director of the Science Foundation, James L. Moore III, said in a public statement that the center will embrace all ranges of science, from astronomy and radio science to biology, computer science, and natural science. Students and educators visited the center this past summer to attend some of the programs that were launched on a pilot basis. This is Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
CQ Worldwide Contests have announced a return to a practice regarding award eligibility. We have those details from Cell MB KB3TZD.
Following meetings with contest directors and Worldwide Radio Operators Foundation leadership, the organizers of CQ Worldwide Contests have restored eligibility for awards to qualifying amateurs from Russia and Belarus. That policy change took effect during the weekend of the CQ Worldwide RIDI contest, which took place on the 28th and 29th of September. CQ Worldwide Contest Director John Doerr, K1AR, announced on the contest blog that the elimination of those operators' eligibility for award plaques, a decision made 2 years ago, was never formally incorporated into any contest rules. It was merely a policy statement. That policy is no longer in effect, bringing the contests into alignment with so many other competitions around the world. This is LMB, KB3, TZD.
In the world of DX, listen for Marcus, DJ4EL, operating as A5/DJ4EL from the islands of Benidorm, Escombreras, and Tabarca, all part of IOTA group number EU093, from the 17th through to the 25th of October. See QRZ.com for QSL and operating details. Find Aldir, a PY1SAD, active as 8R1TM, from Georgetown, Guyana, between the 12th of October and the 24th of November. He will be using CW, sideband, and digital modes on all bands. He will also be operating satellite. For QSL information, see QRZ.com. Bo, OZ1DJJ, is using the call sign OX3LX from Greenland until the 15th of October. For QSL and operating details, see QRZ.com. Our final story begins 100 years ago. In October of 1924, a young radio enthusiast in North London, England, and a sheep farmer in New Zealand changed the shape of the world via radio with a remarkable on-air contact. Now, amateur stations are getting ready to celebrate that CUSO's centennial. Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, tells us what's going on.
Hams in the UK and New Zealand are getting ready to activate special call signs to mark the first transglobal two-way radio communication, and will be operating from the locations where it happened. The Mill Hill School in North London, where young Cecil Goyder, G2SZ, made radio contact with Frank Bell, Z4AA, a ham in Shag Valley, Otago. The date of the hour-long CW contact was the 18th of October, 1924. Here's the voice of the late Frank Bell, who in 1974 recalled that day on the occasion of the QSO's 50th anniversary.
We were both a bit shocked, I suppose, really. And Cecil Goyder, whom I was talking to, in Mill Hill School in near London, he said he was a bit skeptical about it. He said, if you're really a New Zealand 4AA cable, which we did, and from then on, pretty well every night for several nights running, we kept in touch.
Cecil's call sign will be back on the air in hopes of contacting hams around the world as operators call CQ from the school from the 14th through the 20th of October. Frank's original call sign has been modified to ZL4AA for the New Zealand operation, which will be on the air from the 12th through to the 20th of October. The big day, of course, is the 18th of October, when hams will reenact that first contact using a frequency as close as possible to the 1924 original, which was around 92 metres. Meanwhile, be listening as well for other stations taking part in the celebration. GB2NZ is on the air through the 26th October 2024 throughout the UK. ZM100DX is on the air through the 26th of December throughout New Zealand. The New Zealand station will be using CW, SSB, and a number of other modes. The QSL manager for all four special event calls is M0OXO. See GB2NZ.com for further details. This is Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Don't forget the Amateur Radio Newsline Haiku Challenge. If you're not too busy tuning your antennas or chasing the latest de-expedition, pick up a pencil and share your experience by sending an original haiku to us here at Newsline. Use the entry form on our website, arnewsline.org, and please follow the rules for writing your three-line haiku. Sorry, but we cannot accept entries that aren't written in traditional haiku form. Share with fellow listeners the poetry that is inspired by your ham radio experience. With thanks to Amateur Radio Weekly, AMSAT News Service, Arecibo C3 website, Associated Press, Amateur Radio Digital Communications, ARRL, Clearwater Tribune, CQ Worldwide Contest Blog, David BR, K7DB, TheDesk.net, Don Gardner, W7PJ, FCC, 425DX News, IFL Science, Mount Mitchell Repeater, National Hurricane Center, NZNet Newsletter, QRZ.com, Radio Society of Great Britain, QRPR.com, Radio Society of Sri Lanka, ShortwaveRadio.de, Zero Retries, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. We remind our listeners listeners that Amateur Radio Newsline is an all-volunteer, nonprofit organization that incurs expenses for its continued operation. If you wish to support us, please visit our website at arnewsline.org and know that we appreciate you all. We also remind our listeners that if you like our newscast, please leave us a 5-star rating wherever you subscribe to us. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG in Union, Kentucky, saying 7-3. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2024, all rights reserved.